sculptures herself, Doc Mom said, in her studio. They were incredible. I looked at Annie. I always knew she was creative and brilliant, but I never realized she could do something as amazing as this. You're incredible, I said to her. Thank you, she said. Where the gardens opened up, we stepped out onto a wide grass lawn in front of the house, which was mostly made of stone and had tall windows all along the front, looking out across the water. There was a broad wooden deck on the edge of the lawn, right where the grass gave way to a slope of black lava rocks that lined the shore. You couldn't see any other house from there. The property was surrounded by forest. And just as we got to the front door, the sun hit the perfect angle in the west behind us, and it looked like the entire city of Seattle turned rust-hued, and the peak of Mount Rainier seemed to float, salmon-colored, in the sky. Hey, I said, you can see the Space Needle from your front yard. Annie rolled her eyes. If you get changed out of your strip-search clothes, we can walk on the beach before dinner, she said. I will admit that my inside-out sock was bothering me, but all I had besides school clothes were running shorts, sweats, and my new swim trunks. Okay, I said. Doc Dad led the way into the entry hall and said, Annie, why don't you take Ryan Dean to the guest room? Damn. Oh, he doesn't want to be that far away all alone, she said. Oh, my God, will it actually happen? Annie continued, I'll put him in the little room across from mine. Next thing I knew, I heard the clicking of manicured dog nails on the wood floor, followed by the chirp-like shriek of repetitive barking, and then this smash-faced little dog appeared and immediately came after my leg in a hump ambush. Pedro! Annie scolded. Just kick him, Doc Mom said. He never quits otherwise. You know, when someone tells you to kick their dog, the same dog who is currently in a breeding frenzy with your nicest pair of dorky school pants, it's a difficult thing to judge exactly how hard the dog should be kicked. So I decided I'd give Pedro a conservative 3 out of 5 Cossack dancers on the Ryan Dean West how far to kick a gay pug spectrum. That's mean, Annie said, but she did kind of laugh as Pedro skittered like a hockey puck toward the sunken living room. Good man, Ryan Dean, Doc Dad said. I don't know why we haven't cut his balls off yet. And why is it, I thought, that whenever boys consider such measures, despite their justifiability, we always get a bit scared, morose, and angsty? Oh, well. Come on, Annie said. Then she grabbed my hand and led me down the hallway to our right. She stopped suddenly. Annie must have realized what she was doing. Unlike Pedro, she could control the involuntary impulse to conjugate with Ryan Dean West, because she immediately let go like my hand was a red-hot thing that gets red-hot or something. I followed her, lugging my suitcase and the bag from the sporting goods store. The door on the right is your room, she said, just across the hall from mine. I opened my door and set my bags down on the floor. It's amazing how much a guy can appreciate a non-bunk bed bed and a bathroom that doesn't have at least 2 other guys in it at all times. The window was uncovered and looked out at the beach and tall dark pines, and I had my own television and a huge bathroom with an ice block shower cubicle. How do you like it? Annie said. Please adopt me, I said. Then I added, no. On second thought, that could get a little weird. Let's just hop across the border to Canada and get married. Annie laughed. I kicked my shoes off and said, I'll get changed. Okay, meet me in the hall in like 30 seconds, she said. I thought 30 seconds meant I'd have time to get out of my clothes, but not into them. Oh well, wishful thinking. Doc's mom and dad would probably disapprove of the clothing-optional house guest, and that dog was out there waiting for me anyway. Okay, I said, and Annie left me alone. Whenever I get off an airplane, I feel like I've been deep-fried, dripping in oil. And I probably smelled like booze from the drunk, bald, fat guy slobbering on my shoulder. So it felt really good to tear all my clothes off, without a couple of security guards pawing through them. And even better, to just throw them onto the floor, something I hadn't been able to do all year. Now, with all the scattered, discarded articles of boy clothes, this looked like a real guy's room. All I needed to do was mess up the perfectly smoothed bed covers, which I did with a jump. I put on the red trunks they bought me, as well as a gray Pine Mountain RFC, which means Rugby Football Club, sweatshirt, some clean inside-in socks, and my running shoes, and I was out my door and in the hall in under a minute. Annie opened her door. No matter what she wore, Annie Altman always looked perfect. She had changed into faded jeans that were just wearing through at the knees and all along the bottoms of the pockets, with a pale blue sweater that really made her black hair and blue eyes stand out, even in the dim light of the hallway. I had never seen her dressed in home clothes before, and I couldn't take my eyes off her. And I am such a loser, I couldn't even speak when she asked, "Want to see my room?" Her room was so Annie. The walls were covered with paintings and sculptures of fish and birds that she'd made. Her windows looked out into the forest, and she had French doors that opened to a stepping stone path. Next to her bed was a wonder horse, one of those spring-mounted things kids used to play on like 100 years ago. "Wow," I said, but my voice cracked like a little kid who suddenly realized he was alone inside the bedroom of the girl he loved. Which made sense, considering the oppressive reality of my surrounding conditions. "Do you still ride?" Annie laughed. "Come on." She opened the pane doors and led me onto the path outside her room. Chapter 54 We walked along the rocky beach in the sunset. The water and the sound was so black and rolling, jagged and alive. Everything smelled like the sea and trees. Between the cracks in the rocks, I could see the claws of wedged-in crabs spitting bubbles, sometimes moving slightly like they wanted to keep an eye on us, like they were spying on us. "Tomorrow morning we can go run out past that point." Annie's hand indicated a distant and darkening stand of trees. "This is so nice," I said. My shoes were wet from walking too close to the water. "Thanks so much for asking me, Annie. I knew you'd like it." "I never knew you were such an artist," I said.
"Just like you," she said.
"Crud, you are so much more. I draw stick figures. You make stuff that's real."
"I can tell my mom and dad really like you."
I pulled out the leg of my trunks. I got the trunks on.
They look good.
We stopped and turned back toward the house. It was beginning to get dark. I was convinced she was playing the same game with me that I was playing with her, but I wasn't going to fall for it, not for a second. There was still that sensible and pathetic part of my mind that kept telling me Annie Altman only thought I was a little kid and nothing else. But we did stand there for a minute, and I could smell her and feel the warmth, like a static charge coming from her. And she looked at my face, and we were so close when she said,
"Your stitches look like they're getting better."
I leaned closer to her. Damn, she looked so nice, and I was so impressed by how she lived and the beautiful things she'd created there with her own hands, and I wanted to... "Do not kiss her, Ryan Dean West. Ugh. I am such a loser." She knew exactly what she was doing. She started back at the house and said over her shoulder in her singing voice, the voice that knew everything and made nothing matter,
"Don't even tell me that you didn't almost do it just now, Ryan Dean."
Damn. I couldn't say anything. Annie stopped and looked back.
So there. We're even. Admit it.
I don't know what you're talking about, I said. I followed after her, and when I caught up beside her, I held her hand. I bet JP would be jealous, I said.
Don't even go there, West. You said we shouldn't talk about JP to each other.
Okay. I sighed. In the fading light, we hadn't noticed that her mother and father had been standing just down the beach watching us, but we didn't let go of our hands. Her father's arm was around her mother's shoulders. Doc Mom smiled and said,
"You look so nice walking on the beach together."
After dinner, Annie and I went out to the pool house to go for a swim. Unfortunately, her parents came along. They just sat there reading in lounge chairs, but they were keeping an eye on us, too, and I think they enjoyed doing it. But when we sat in the hot tub, I started playing with Annie's feet and rubbing her legs with mine. It was the best feeling I could ever have dreamed up, and I could tell Annie liked it, too, but it was really making me crazy. So I leaned my head back on the deck and closed my eyes because I wasn't about to let her think I wanted to kiss her, or something else. But I will say that all Annie would have had to do was whisper, "Let's go skinny dipping." And those goddamned red lifeguard trunks would have been hanging from the rafters. Chapter 55. It felt so comfortable sleeping in that bed that I guess I must not have wanted to wake up. When I did, the sun was already pouring through my window and someone was knocking on my door.
"Ryan Dean, are you still sleeping?"
It was Annie.
"I was, until maybe 2 seconds ago. Sorry."
I rubbed my eyes.
"You can come in,"
I said. The door cracked open and she cautiously peeked her head into my room. I could see she was dressed for a run. I folded my hands on the pillow beneath my head. This was like a dream come true, Annie Altman waking me up in the morning after we practically took a bath together the night before.
"Come get some breakfast and let's go for our run. It's beautiful out there."
"It's not so bad in here either," I thought.
"Okay."
I sat up and rubbed my chin. "I'll be right there after I get ready. I think I need to shave." Annie laughed.
"Yeah, right.
Hey, I have one whisker, right here under my chin, just one. I'm thinking of giving it a name, but I don't know if I should let it grow out or chop its head off." I tilted my head back and put my finger on my jaw. "See it?"
"No."
"Well, you can't see it from way over there. You have to get close." She moved to the edge of the bed. "Score." "Look," I said. "It's even dark and everything." I kept my chin up and Annie leaned over me.
"Oh, yeah," she said. "I can see it."
She was so close. She said,
"It looks so lonely and lost. Maybe you shouldn't shave it, and maybe you should name it Ryan Dean."
I looked into her eyes.
"I better get out of here,"
Annie said, straightening. Then she spun around and went to the door. "We're not even anymore, Annie." Then I heard her call Pedro, and that little disgusting animal came nailed, tapping, panting, slobbering, excited, grunting into my room. Annie left, shutting the door, just as Pedro sailed up onto my bed and began frantically mounting my foot. I scooped him up by his little sweaty armpits, his hips still pumping at the air, opened the door with my elbow and scooted him like a shuffle-boarded puck puppy to the opposite end of the hallway. Annie was smiling, standing there watching me. I looked at her and said, "So, are you going to give me time to get dressed, or is it okay if I come to breakfast in my underwear?" She laughed, and I said, "And no, we are not even. Ryan Dean West has officially pulled into the lead."
"It's not fair if you count getting Pedro to think about kissing you."
"Good one, Annie. In that case, I'm way ahead of you." I went back inside my room and got into my running gear. Chapter 56. Doc Mom fed us bagels with butter and sweet tomato jam she'd made from her own summer garden, and we drank black coffee and orange juice. And throughout the meal, the Doc parents were both trying to talk to us, but our feet were twitching and we needed to get outside. "I'm sorry, Doc Mom," I said. "I don't usually sleep this late, but this place sure is a beautiful spot for resting."
"Thank you, Ryan Dean. Doc Mom, I like that. Poor boy, you sleep as late as you want. You can do whatever you feel like when you're in our house," she said.
I fired a quick and perverted arched eyebrow. It hurt my stitches. Remember the jacuzzi look at Annie, who rolled her eyes. We ran so far that morning. I'd almost forgotten that Annie's being on the cross-country team meant that anything under 10 miles was a warm-up for her. I followed Annie along trails and streets, heading south along the shore of the island, and we came to a park where a stream cut a V-shaped harbor. The place was deserted, too. I saw just one small fishing boat, rocking like a lazy walrus off the shore. We stopped running and walked through wide fields of knee-high grass that made our legs wet. The park was the site of an old sawmill, now abandoned, but the outer walls of the mill building still stood, square, like a fort in the middle of the field. And you could tell from the outline of the perimeter of the open space and how the forest butted up against it that there had been tall trees there at one time before the mill was operational.
"Come on," Annie said. "I want you to see inside the building."
I followed her. It was kind of a surreal place. What was left of the old mill, the floor and side walls, had been entirely constructed of concrete. Huge openings in the sides and in the roof were the gutted remains of former doors and skylights, and just about every available surface inside was painted with bizarre and colorful graffiti, some of it very artistic, and a lot of it just nasty and drugged out. There was even a tree growing from a hole in the floor, all the way up through one of the open skylights about 20 feet over our heads.
"Who did all this?"
I said, turning in my place and scanning all the images.
"Just kids. They get bored living here."
"They do?" I couldn't believe anyone would ever get bored here.
"I remembered seeing something here one time," Annie said, "and I wanted to see if I could find it again if it hasn't been painted over."
She moved past one of the thick steel girders that supported the roof.
"Come here," she said. "Look. I thought about you when I saw this last time I was here."
Annie pointed down to the base of one of the walls, and there, beneath a big red word that spelled out "someday" in interlocking letters, was a painting of two overlapping black circles.
"You remember that?" I said. "It was about your wish. That last time we were at Stonehenge," Annie said. "And I thought about it a lot. I felt bad because I'd been so mean to you that week, and I realized that I was pretty unfair to you, too. I mean about the little boy stuff."
"Oh?" I knew we were standing too close again. I was practically sweating on her, and I didn't want her to just be playing. But she was. I backed away, but just a bit, and I looked at the circles.
"So, did you get over it? The outside the overlap part of me, I mean?"
She looked at me. Her eyes had that relaxed, smiling look in them. She didn't say anything. We just looked. Then she stepped closer to me and touched my hand. I said, "Okay. I don't care. I lose." And then I kissed Annie Altman for like 20 straight minutes. And there was no interruption from the visually abrasive Mrs. Singer. There was nothing in the entire universe except for me and Annie finally getting something over with that had been making us both crazy for so long. I didn't care that she'd won our little game.
because for those incredible minutes, pinning her body between mine and the coolness of the painted concrete wall in that old mill, my hands holding the back of her neck, feeling the softness of her hair falling across the sweat of my arms, I finally didn't feel like such a loser. I was shaking. I said, "I told you I'd do it when I wanted to. And I decided I wanted to." We got back to her house at lunchtime, and her father said, "Wow, you two must have gone pretty far." Annie smiled at me, and I know she was thinking about the perverted comment I'd normally be tempted to make at such a statement. But this was not a normal time for Ryan Dean West. And she said, "Oh, it was the perfect run, Dad." And I said, "Yeah, completely perfect." Chapter 57. That afternoon, Annie kept her promise to fix my school pants, but her mom helped. So I stood there in the sewing room in my socks and underwear, doing the on-off routine with my pants, while hot Annie pinned and her hot mother worked the sewing machine. You know, it's easy to play all cool and stuff about how hot certain females are, but it's another thing entirely to find yourself actually standing in front of them in your underwear. I'm not really sure if I was handling the opportunity in the most advantageous manner. I wondered if there were many guys out there who actually could. I was so red and embarrassed, and Doc Mom tried to make small talk about how nice it was to have a boy in the house, but it was like my tongue had been bee-stung, and I couldn't say anything because I just wanted to keep hearing both of them tell me to take my pants off again. I am such a loser. All I could think about was how I'd actually kissed Annie that day, and I wondered if we would ever have the guts to say anything about it, or if we'd even have the guts to make it happen again. Then I had to stand there waiting in my boxers while Doc Mom ironed the old hems out and made me try on every pair of slacks one last time before she was satisfied they were perfect. All I knew was that I wished I'd grow another 2 inches by the next morning so we'd be required to do it over again, and maybe next go-round I'd be all suave and debonair and stuff and make witty comments, instead of just gurgling like a goldfish on a linoleum floor. "There," Doc Mom said. "I think you look very handsome." "Thanks, Doc Mom," I said, and unbuttoned my pants and began pulling them down. "Ryan Dean, you can leave them on now. We're finished," she said. I am such a loser. "He got strip-searched at the airport, Mom," Annie said. "I think he's traumatized by it." "Really?" Doc Mom said. Oh, yeah. She's a psychologist. So now she needed to hear the whole story about what happened and how poor Ryan Dean had been mentally abused. I gave Annie an ultra-terrified, "Oh my God, please don't tell your mom about the Band-Aid on my balls" look. But it was too late for that. Annie launched into the entire story going all the way back to Wednesday when Sean Russell Flaherty stepped on my nuts at rugby practice and I went to the doctor for it. And Doc Mom, being the compassionate therapist that she is, laughed until she had tears in her eyes, just like Annie does, and said that was one of the funniest stories she'd ever heard. When Annie was finished with the getting on the airplane as Ryan Dean's pants fell down again part, I excused myself to return to my room so I could kill myself. I probably would have, too. Except just as I stepped out into the hallway, three things happened at once. One, Pedro hump-ambushed me and I almost fell down. Two, I realized that both Annie and her 5 out of 5 leather couches on the Ryan Dean West hot therapist inkblot test mom had just had a conversation about my balls. Three, Doc Mom said to Annie, "I just love Ryan Dean." And I swear to God, but then again, this is coming from the same boy who's heard all kinds of twisted things coming from Mrs. Singer's mouth, but I swear to God that Annie said, "So do I." Of course, I can't be absolutely certain, because of the noise of anguished and love-starved grunts coming from that goddamned gay pug. Chapter 58. We didn't talk about what happened in the abandoned sawmill, and we didn't kiss again either, for that whole endlessly long Saturday. And the next morning, when I woke up, it was drizzling rain, and I was so depressed about having to leave Bainbridge Island and fly back to Oregon later that day that I seriously felt like I could cry. So I stayed in bed until I heard Annie's door open across the hall. Then she knocked. "Come in." This time she just walked right in. "Good morning," she said.
"Hi.
Are you okay?" I pulled the covers over my face and hid. "I don't want to go back to school, Annie. Make it be yesterday again. Do you want to run?" "I love running in the rain. Meet me in the kitchen in like 30 seconds.
"Okay,"
she said. "Let's just run in the woods today." We sat down to breakfast with the Doc parents. We had oatmeal and black coffee. I love coffee. I hate oatmeal, but I'll be honest, I'd eat anything at the Altman's table. I wore my black running shorts and Pine Mountain RFC sweatshirt with a blue cap that I started to take off when I sat down, but Doc Mom told me to keep it on, that I didn't have to be like that in their house. "Next time you come up, Ryan Dean," Doc Dad said, "do you think you could bring me one of those sweatshirts? I don't have any rugby stuff anymore."
"No problem," I said.
"And I fully intend on coming down and seeing you play a match this season, too," he said. "It's been a long time since I've seen the game. Too long."
"That would be really cool,"
I said. Doc Mom looked sad. I could tell it was hard for her to always say goodbye to her daughter, but Annie told me that they saw each other more often now that she was at Pine Mountain than they ever did when they all lived together full time. I guess things work out like that sometimes.
"I'm sure going to miss having you here, Ryan Dean," Doc Mom said.
"I want to see you back before Thanksgiving if your folks will let you."
"If it's okay with Annie," I said. This was the best weekend I ever had in my life, I think.
Annie tipped her coffee cup empty and said,
"Let's go, West, if you're done."
We went out into the gray, wet morning. Running through the woods north of her house, it amazed me how green things grew on top of green things that were still green and growing. Trees were covered with ferns and vines and mosses, and everywhere it looked as if nothing had been dry in centuries. And in the dark woods as we ran, I could smell that living ocean scent of the island, and I heard nothing but the sounds of our feet on the wet ground, our breathing, and the static spark sizzle of rain dripping through the forest cover. She was running fast, trying to push me, or trying to get somewhere that I didn't know about.
"Hey," I said, "stop for a minute, Annie."
Where a tree branch arched across the trail, black and covered with hair of brilliant moss, Annie stopped and turned around to wait for me. I was panting. Dark rings of sweat made circles under my arms and a V that pointed at my belly down from my neck. My cap was soaked dark with the drizzling rain.
"Don't kiss me, Ryan Dean."
Now that was like getting kicked in the balls again.
"Okay."
I bent forward and put my hands on my knees. I spit between my feet.
"Did I do something wrong, Annie?"
"No.
I just think we shouldn't do that again."
Okay with me,"
I said. I tried to sound like Annie would if she'd said it, all nonchalant and sing-songy, but my voice cracked and I felt like a fucking idiot. "I just wanted to say thanks again for having me here, and how much I like your mom and dad."
"You're welcome, Ryan Dean," she said.
"Do you want to turn around?"
"No, I want you to make it be yesterday again."
"Stop it, Ryan Dean."
"Okay, Annie. I know what's up."
"Okay."
"I can't be in love with you, Ryan Dean."
I turned around and started running back to her house.
Maybe, I thought, if I ran fast enough like those fucking stupid old science fiction movies, I could go back in time. I ran faster than I ever had in my pathetic life. But it didn't work. I am such a loser. What a bunch of crap. Chapter 59. I just ran. The woods were dark, the clouds were getting thicker. I took off my cap and tossed it into the blackberry vines that grew everywhere in these woods. Then I pulled my sweatshirt off, soaked and inside out, and dropped it in the mud of the trail. I kept running. I kicked my foot out of one shoe and threw it as far as I could into the woods to the right, and I whispered, "Fuck you, shoe," when I chucked it. I listened to it hit, falling like a dead bird somewhere out in the dark green. Then I kicked off the other shoe and threw it in the opposite direction. I threw it so hard it hurt my arm. My socks were black with mud. I guess I was kind of insane. No, I'll be honest. What Annie was doing to me made me completely insane, and I couldn't stand myself anymore. I pulled my socks off and left them in the trail. Part of me wanted to strip completely naked and just run out into the woods and be some kind of free and wild boy who never had to do anything for anyone except run around naked in the forest and kill things when he got hungry. But just feeling the nylon of my running shorts against my shriveling skin, I guess, somehow reminded me that I had a plane to catch later that day and calculus homework, and I was supposed to be reading In Our Time. And I'd been neglecting all that stuff because I was too busy thinking I was some kind of free and wild boy ever since Friday afternoon. So now it was time again to be Ryan Dean West, the fucking loser kid who's 14 and in 11th grade. I sat on the wet concrete outside their front door, shivering. I think my skin was as gray as the sky, and I was hugging my knees to try and get warm when she came up to the house, holding my soaked and muddy sweatshirt and socks at her side.
"What are you doing, Ryan Dean?"
Nothing. I was stuttering. I was so cold. "I told you, I like running in the rain. I wanted to get wet."
"I'm sorry, Ryan Dean."
"It's no big deal, Annie. Really."
"Stay there," she said, dropping my clothes on the step beside me. "I'm going to get you a towel."
Chapter 60. We didn't say things like we usually do on the drive to the airport. Doc Mom asked if I had a good time and if I wanted to come back. I gave the polite one-word answers that would have been written down in a script about some other kid. And truth is, yeah, I had a great time. And yeah, I wanted to come back so bad it felt like I was getting stabbed in my skinny bitch-ass chest. But just wanting that and feeling that wasn't going to change my universe. I sat at the window on the plane. I read Indian Camp and held Annie's hand for the whole flight, but I didn't say anything to her. I just looked out the window or read. Chapter 61. We were the first ones back, so we had to wait in the airport for Joey. And then it wouldn't be until Megan and suspended licensed Chaz arrived from L.A., that we take the achingly quiet and long drive back to Pine Mountain. So we sat, silently, next to each other on the black vinyl seats in the arrivals lounge, waiting for Joey's flight from San Francisco. It was ironic that I'd read The Doctor and the Doctor's Wife, the second story in the Hemingway book, because I thought it was all about how guys and girls don't understand each other at all. And I was already guessing what kinds of ridiculous things Mr. Wellens would say about those first stories, but still, I thought they were probably some of the best writing I'd ever read. Maybe it was just my mood, I don't know. I closed the book when Annie said,
"Do you want to get something to drink or something?"
What a choice. I could have something or something. I wondered if something to Annie included all the possible somethings that existed to me. And then I got mad at myself for drawing a diagram of those somethings in my head.
"I'll
take some of the second something, I said.
Annie smiled.
Are you going to talk to me? She said.
The wild boy of Bainbridge Island doesn't talk, I said. He grunts.
She laughed, but her eyes looked sadder than they usually did.
What do you want to talk about, Annie?
About how we can't be, like, in love with each other. It would be ridiculous, Ryan Dean.
I leaned my head sideways on the seat back. I think they make those things so uncomfortable just to remind you there could always be something worse than a seat on an airplane, or an eternity in hell.
Our shoulders were touching.
Oh, I totally agree with you, Annie.
I didn't blink, I just looked right at her.
So don't be sad, Ryan Dean.
We were so close.
That would be ridiculous, I said.
She just watched me. I wondered if she thought I was playing, because I wasn't. I was serious then, and I had pretty much given up on everything. I even thought that once we got back to Pine Mountain, I was going to call my dad and tell him I wanted to go home. I needed to go home. I was giving up.
Did you start reading this yet?
I held the Hemingway up in front of her.
No.
It's really good.
Really?
And then she leaned even closer to me. I wondered if she noticed I'd shaved that one whisker off.
Or something, I said.
And then I thought, oh my God, she's acting like she's going to kiss me. How can she be doing that? This is absolute bullshit. Please kiss me, Annie.
She closed her eyes and very softly, she put her lips on mine. And I closed my eyes too because I didn't know if I was madder than hell or if I wanted to cry. But why was she doing this? And it felt nicer than anything, and she tasted like the air smelled on the island, full of life and energy. When she pulled away, we both opened our eyes. I said,
"You are going to make me completely insane, Annie."
"Me too."
We didn't even notice that Joey had been standing right there, watching us the whole time.
"Well, it's about fucking time," Joey said.
"I'll say." And Annie kind of stammered,
"We were not just doing that, Joey."
"Yeah, that would be ridiculous," I said. "You must have been drinking on the plane if you thought you saw us kissing."
"Okay," Joey said. "I timed it and everything. It was at least a minute and a half. That's not kissing, you're right. It's making out. It's practically having sex in public."
I wanted to high-five Joey so bad my hand was twitching. What a fucking awesome thing to say, especially coming from a gay guy.
Annie said. "I need to go get a bottle of water."
When she left, I stood up and said, "Hell yeah!" And yes, a new decibel level record was officially established for the loudest ever airborne, since I jumped, gay straight high five. Unfortunately, it was a little too loud, and Annie wasn't out of earshot on her water shopping trip, so she gave me the patented Annie Altman that will never happen again look.
"What's up with her?" Joey said.
"Dude, she is being really weird about it. She's making me crazy. I don't think she knows what she wants."
"Maybe she's afraid she'll get hurt," Joey said.
"Because of the way you objectify every girl in the fucking world."
"Dude, Joey, are you telling me off again?"
"No, Ryan Dean, I'm just saying. You think every girl you ever see is hot, right? Maybe Annie wants to be more than that. That's what I'd think about if I was you."
"I don't think every girl is hot," I said.
There was, after all, Mrs. Singer downstairs.
"And anyway, if you were me, I'd be gay, in which case every girl would look exactly like Mary Todd Lincoln."
Joey laughed.
"But I think I know what you're saying," I said.
I envied Joey. He hadn't shaved since Friday morning, and he had some pretty impressive stubble going. I mourned that one whisker I'd shaved off because I would have shown him. At Pine Mountain, if a boy showed up to class with facial hair like Joey had,
They'd take him into the bathroom and make him shave on the spot with a nasty old used razor. But on weekends, guys like Joey and Chaz could just skip the whole grooming thing entirely. I sighed. I shaved this morning, Joey. I had one whisker. Here. Can you see it? I held my chin up and pointed. Joey leaned close and laughed. Yeah, sure. And then he asked, how was her place? Incredible. I am so in love with her, Joe. I can see that, Ryan Dean. More than I can see that non-whisker, that's for sure. Chapter 62. I called my mother from the airport. Well, to be honest, I called home hoping I'd be able to talk to my dad, but no such luck. Ryan Dean West. Hi, Mom. It's me, Ryan Dean. I know, I'm an idiot. Mom. Hi, sweetie. Are you back from Seattle? Ryan Dean West. I'm at the airport in Portland. Mom. Did you have a good time, Ryan Dean? Ryan Dean West. It was the best weekend ever, Mom. Mom. Oh. I thought she sounded sad? Awkward pause. Very awkward pause. Mom continued, is everything okay, Ryan Dean? You sound different. I can't believe it. Is she actually crying? Ryan Dean West, are you crying, Mom? Mom, I'm sorry, baby. You just sound so grown up all of a sudden. Did you and your girlfriend, you know? Please, someone kill me now. Ryan Dean West, no. Mom, well, did you get the package I sent? Did everything work the way the booklet said it would? Sniff. Why is it a guy can have an entire conversation with a girl and it's like she's hearing something entirely different from what is coming out of his mouth? Ryan Dean West. Mom, I am not calling to talk about sex. This was so creepily disgusting. Here was the one person in the world with whom I would never want to talk about the one thing I think about constantly. Ryan Dean West continued. I'm calling to ask you to FedEx me a new pair of running shoes. I lost mine on the island. Mom. Oh, I'm so sorry, sweetie. She sounded crushed. Ryan Dean West. It's okay, Mom. They were getting too small anyway. I gained 10 pounds and I'm 2 inches taller now than when you saw me in September. I need size 10 and a half. Nikes or Asics, okay? Mom. 10 and a half? 10 and a half? She started crying again. Crap. Chapter 63. Two things kind of hit me when I saw Chaz and Megan get off the flight from Los Angeles together. First, they looked like they were tired of each other, like an old married couple who'd gone on too long of a vacation together and did not have fun. And second, I was kind of jealous that Chaz got to spend the weekend with Megan. I know that's stupid. Does that make me a bad person? No matter what Joey said, I wasn't ever going to be able to stop thinking of Megan Renshaw as smoking hot, and in some ways she was more accessible to me than Annie. I'll be honest, seeing her coming off the plane and realizing I was jealous of Chaz did make me feel terrible about the whole situation. And I thought, maybe I just felt that way because in some ways I was convinced that Annie was going to throw me away again. Maybe Joey was right, that Annie didn't want to get hurt. But goddammit, neither did I. So maybe I just looked at Megan as some type of 5 out of 5 sizzling white hot crescent wrenches on the Ryan Dean West safety net tool chart. I still felt bad, though. And I grabbed Joey by the collar while we were waiting at baggage claim and whispered, Joey, tell me to grow up again. And he said, Ryan Dean, grow the fuck up. Because he saw how I'd been looking at Megan. You know, there's this lesson in cheesy stories that says, be careful what you wish for. But I was never one for cheesy stories, much less morally condescending messages.
So it was kind of like dying and going to that special place with great-grandma and that two-dimensional chihuahua of mine, when pissed off at Megan, Chaz grumbled that he wanted to sit in front, so Asswing can sit in the back with the other two girls. Yeah, whatever, Betch. Call me a girl. Call me an Asswing. But for a 2-hour car ride, my legs would be simultaneously touching the legs of Megan Renshaw and Annie Altman, and I fully believed that would precipitate the all-time lowest blood pressure reading north of Ryan Dean Westworld's metal detector tipping equator. And then again, there was still that unopened bottle of piss, too. So call me whatever you want. Do things like that explode? I wondered, since I'd never actually kept a bottle of piss around for more than 3 days tops before. And I was also fully aware of how incredibly stupid I could be at times like this, so I told myself, or Ryan Dean West said it to the wild boy of Bainbridge Island, that I'd better just shut up, keep my eyes forward, and not cop any obvious feels. Yeah, right. Okay, to be honest, I can abide by the limitation of obviousness, but the feels part was a done deal as far as the wild boy of Bainbridge Island was concerned. Oh, and eyes forward? Are you kidding me? So that meant shutting up. That was probably out, too. We got all our stuff loaded into the SUV and piled in. The back windows immediately fogged up. I felt myself beginning to sweat. I slipped my shoes off and kicked them under the seat, quietly contemplating the beauty of that hump in the floor, which allowed me to touch Annie's foot with my left and Megan's foot with my right. Suddenly, I felt myself in a battle of epic proportions, pitting good and pure Ryan Dean West against the crazed urges of the humping wild boy of Bainbridge Island, who undoubtedly had been somehow infected from the saliva of that sex-starved gay pug dog, and as a result, felt a helpless compulsion to hump anything with a pulse. I am such a loser. I didn't even make it out of the goddamned parking lot. Ryan Dean West. Stop trying to play footsie with two girls at the same time. You're getting mud on my socks. Wild boy of Bainbridge Island. I can take them off if you want. You know how I feel about wearing clothes anyway. Ryan Dean West. Oh my God, you wouldn't. Wild boy of Bainbridge Island loosens his tie and begins unbuttoning his shirt. It's really hot in here, I said. Megan smiled at me. She slipped off her shoe and was playing with my foot right under Chaz's seat, where no one could see what was going on. I felt like I was melting. I had to do something to pull myself back away from the wild boy urges. I fought. I slipped my hand into Annie's, interlocking our fingers. I squeezed tight, our hands resting on the soft fabric of her skirt where it draped over her thigh. God! I think I actually began hyperventilating, creating my own microclimate in the back seat, where it was as humid as a rainforest in the Amazon. Worse, it actually started raining in the goddamned back seat. Megan saw that I was holding hands with Annie. She didn't look happy. She pulled her foot away and slipped it back inside her shoe. She turned her face toward the window and put her hand down on the seat between us. That's when she touched my butt. That gave the wild boy renewed strength, and good, pure, and kind Ryan Dean deflated to a wasted and wimpy 152-pound sack of crap. So in a last-ditch effort, I squeaked, "I had a really good weekend," to Annie, but I sounded like a third grader on helium. I cleared my throat. I don't know where this new Ryan Dean West came from, but I realized that everything Joey had been cussing me out about was totally true, and worse, that Megan Renshaw was every bit as evil as Mrs. Singer. And, Annie, I never told you this? Well, at least not the right way, but the things you make at your house? Everything, the sculptures, and how your room is, your wonder horse, and the sounds and smells and everything? It's so beautiful. It makes me feel lucky just to know you.
Score. I rallied my strength and pulled my right foot over the hump away from Megan, so both of my feet could be tangled up around Annie's. I leaned my head back and looked at her. Megan pinched my butt really hard, but I stifled my jerk reflex, and since it hurt so bad it made tears well in my eyes, it was a potential grand slam as far as Annie was concerned. But the play in the outfield didn't quite unfold the way I'd imagined. Chaz said, "I just threw up in my mouth, puss boy." Puss boy. Another new one. Nice. Megan said, "I think Ryan Dean is one of the sweetest, hottest boys I know." Okay, I'll be honest. She actually did say that, and her hand was still under my butt. Chaz gave me an over-the-shoulder, "You're fucking dead, puss boy," look. And Annie gave me the "it was vacation craziness, we are not ever, ever going to kiss again" look. Crap. I was hosed, and I knew it. I sneezed. I suddenly felt terrible. Not terrible because of how much of a loser I was, but terrible because it dawned on me exactly why I was so sweaty and my voice wasn't working. "Are you okay, Ryan Dean?" Annie asked. She was leaning forward in her seat, looking square at my face, so close. "I feel like I'm getting sick," I said. Then, as happens in my reality, all these things occurred at once. One, fight or flight. Chaz turned around and said, "If you fucking puke in my car, puss boy, I'll make you lick it up." This made me feel a little queasier. Two, nice. Annie gave me a sympathetic, "Aw." She put her hand across my forehead, bliss, to see if I had a fever, and said, "Well, you shouldn't have been running around naked in the woods in the rain this morning." Three, hot. Megan's hand warmed up considerably. Her fingers played inside my back pocket, and she said, "You were running naked in the woods? That's so incredibly sexy." Four, kind of thing the wild boy of Bainbridge Island lives to hear, Annie said, "You are really hot, Ryan Dean." Okay, I'll be honest. I know she was talking about my having a fever, but with Megan cupping her hand under my butt cheek and cooing on one side of me, and Annie touching my face and looking so compassionately Florence Nightingale hot on the other, a guy can hallucinate, can't he? Chapter 64. By the time we got back to Pine Mountain, I had been sleeping with my head on Annie's shoulder for over an hour. I woke up when the cold air rushed in on me from the open doors. I felt Annie let go of my hand. "We're back," she said. I felt sick. "Make it be yesterday again." Annie smiled. The others were already around back, pulling their bags out of the SUV. Chaz and Megan still weren't talking to each other. Megan didn't seem to mind. She wheeled her bag away in the direction of the girls' dorm and said, "I hope you feel better, Ryan Dean." Then I knew Chaz was going to do something to get even with me. Probably something painful, but at the very least, humiliating. Annie helped me out of the car. I put my feet down in a puddle of rainwater, then realized my shoes were still sitting on the floor beneath the back seat where I'd left them. I am such a loser.
"Oh my God, I'm so sorry, Ryan Dean," Annie said, but she was laughing about it too.
Of course it was funny, I just felt like crap. I slipped my soggy socks back into my shoes and wiped the sweat from my forehead.
"You need to take a hot shower and get into bed," Annie said.
I wasn't so sick I couldn't say, "I might need some help doing that, Annie."
"You are such a pervert."
She smiled, and those eyes almost made me feel better. Joey put my bag over his shoulder and said, "Come on, I'll take this back for you." We walked through the main gates to the campus together, and just as Annie was turning off toward her dorm, I saw Shawnee and JP,
coming up from the lake path. I turned to Annie and grabbed her hand.
I'll see you tomorrow, okay?
Yeah.
I moved a little closer. I really felt like we were supposed to kiss or something, but I didn't know. I mean, isn't that the normal thing to do after people go away for a weekend together?
I really did have a great time, Annie. Sorry I got mad about things this morning. You know, I just feel like...
I looked down at my sloshing feet and said,
whatever.
I didn't want her to go.
It's okay, Ryan Dean. Get better, okay?
Then she let go of my hand and turned away. I sighed. I really wanted to grab her and turn her around right there in front of everyone and just kiss her, the same way we kissed in the sawmill. But I knew Annie wasn't like that, and no matter how I felt, it wouldn't be the right thing to do. So I slumped my shoulders and followed Joey toward O'Hall, my feet slosh, slosh, sloshing behind him as he carried both our bags.
Hey, nutsack. Welcome back.
Shawnee jogged up to me.
How was the trip?
Of course, JP stayed back on the path away from me, and when I turned around to talk to Shawnee, I saw that JP was saying something to Annie, and I saw her smile at him, and I wondered if we had that same kind of tired of each other look that Chaz and Megan did. No, I knew we didn't.
Dude, did you even hear what I was saying?
Shawnee said. I wasn't really listening to him. I was watching Annie give JP a hug, and then JP looked right at me. It felt like getting kicked in the balls by both of them. I turned away. God, I hated him. Huh? I said. Oh, I had a great time, Shawnee. It was great. He followed along as we walked to O'Hall, and we talked about things, but I wasn't paying attention at all. I know I told him I'd gotten sick, and I know Shawnee was laughing about something he'd done to someone on the internet over the weekend, and it was probably me and probably had something to do with a Band-Aid, but it was all fogged through the filter of my sickness and how much I wanted to kill John Paul Thoreau at that moment. Chapter 65. At midnight, some asshole pulled the sheets off my head and beamed a flashlight in my face.
Get up, puss boy. We're playing poker.
Ugh. Let me sleep, Chaz. I'm sick. I don't mind if you guys go ahead and play. My throat felt like I had swallowed a handful of sewing needles, sideways. Sheets. Off. On the floor. Gravity. Hands grabbing my legs, being pulled over the edge. My feet slapped down onto the cool of the floor, and someone held me up by my armpits to stop me from re-cracking my head open. Crap. I really hate Chaz Becker. I yawned, and when the fluid cleared from my eyes, I could see Joey, Casey Palmer. Of all people, why'd Chaz ask that dickhead to play? And Kevin Cantrell, standing there in front of me with his right arm folded inside a black cloth sling.
Kevin? Wow. Are you okay?
Awkwardly, I shook his left hand. There was something really weird about being cornered into shaking a guy's left hand. It felt creepy and dirty. Standing there in my boxers didn't do anything special to make it feel closer to normal either. I picked up my sheet from the floor where Chaz had thrown it and wrapped it around me. I was shivering a little and sweating, but I wasn't going to get dressed. I refused to. I fully planned on going back to bed. Chaz began setting up the game, and the guys sat in a circle on the floor. I stayed on my feet.
I'll be okay, Kevin said. They have to see if there's going to be nerve damage. The season's over for me, though. That's fucked up, Chaz said. I don't know who we're going to get to lock with me now.
In rugby, locks came in pairs like training wheels, like balls. Chaz and Kevin were arguably the most important guys in the forward pack. Chaz began shuffling.
Get your $20 out and sit down, puss boy.
I guess he'd gotten used to my new nickname. It did have a lyrical sound to it. I said,
Puss Boy's going back to bed.
I looked at Casey and started to climb back up to the top bunk. I still couldn't believe he was there in my room. Then Chaz said, "Sit the fuck down and get your fucking foot off my bed." And he sounded seriously dangerous. I knew he was pissed off about Megan. I knew we were going to have to settle it. Joey said, "Leave him alone, Chaz. He doesn't want to play." Chaz started to say something, and I could tell it was going to be horrible, too. You know how you just kind of get that, "Oh, here comes Chaz Becker's fucked up comment about me and Joey being gay together," when he knows goddamn well his smoking hot girlfriend loves to make out with me feeling? So before he even fully got the first word out of his mouth, I rasped, "No big deal, Joey. I'm in." At least, I figured, with 5 players instead of 4, my odds were 5% better of not receiving the consequence. I grabbed a 20 from my desk and tossed it down to the bank of Chaz. "Here," I said. "And screw you, Chaz." That's not cussing, is it? Then Casey tried to be funny and said, "Is it just me, or is someone here about to get his ass kicked?" "Well, if you're scared, Casey, you could go back to your room and get your pads on, you fucking human tampon," Kevin said. That was cool. I would have high-fived Kevin, but I felt sorry for his arm. Casey glared at Kevin. I watched him. Joey was right about Casey Palmer. There was something cruel and cold in that kid's eyes. Casey Palmer really did know what hate was. "Hey, come on," Joey said. Damn, Joey always stuck up for everyone. Even tools like Casey Palmer. I sat cross-legged, shirtless and barefoot, with my sheet wrapped around my waist. I probably looked like Gandhi or something, so I put my hands together and said, "Namaste." But Joey was the only one who got it. He laughed while Kevin looked politely confused, and Casey looked like he was still pissed off about being called a human tampon, and Chaz said, "Whatever, you fucking puss, let's have a drink." God. I looked at Joey's feet. He and Kevin were wearing our rugby socks again. But this time Kevin pulled his sweats up and showed he had a full bottle of whiskey tucked inside the top of one of his socks and a Maxine's House of Spirits in Atlanta shot glass in the other. I rolled my eyes, but I still had to wonder if Maxine was hot and if she lived in a haunted house or was that just made up? And if it was a haunted house, were there any girl ghosts? And can a ghost be hot? Yeah. I just knew someone was going to die tonight. Chapter 66. I decided that whiskey from a Maxine's House of Spirits in Atlanta shot glass tasted a hell of a lot better than beer from a can, even if I did notice one of Kevin Cantrell's leg hairs floating in it. Oh well, drinking another guy's leg hair can't kill you, can it? But it did make me feel kind of like a zombie. I mean, the leg hair thing, you know, consuming the flesh of the living? Not the whiskey, because that made me feel like the wild boy of Bainbridge Island. And then, too, I had to wonder what Gandhi would have thought about the whole leg hair thing, him being a vegetarian and all. So, yeah, I did have a drink of whiskey. Well, to be honest, maybe 2. I know. I'm such a loser. And I'm not going to feel sorry for myself or try to defend my stupidity, which had been elevated to a kind of wild boy meets Gandhi religion. But the whiskey did wash those sewing needles out of my throat. And I was so pissed off about JP and Annie hugging that I honestly believed I was trying to hurt myself. I had a feeling I wouldn't be going to classes in the morning anyway. Eventually, the wild boy had just about taken over my entire consciousness, and after 2 tips from Maxine's shot glass, he was ready to fight Chaz and Casey at the same time to settle anything left unfinished between us. But then the Gandhi part of me said I should just let them both beat the living crap out of me until they got tired of it. So it was a real ethical dilemma. Kevin and Joey looked quiet and steady like they always did. I don't think they drank as much as the other two guys while we played. Casey and Chaz were pretty drunk. I thought it was a miracle that they didn't start yelling and breaking things and waking up Mr. Farrow. After about half an hour, Chaz and I were both losing badly, so it became a kind of race between us to see which of us would lose out first and get the consequence, even if the wild boy of Bainbridge Island kind of hoped it had something to do with